Hey, this is fun. Amen. I wish everybody could sit close to the front because this singing is incredible. We could just go on for another couple of hours with the singing, but into each life a little rain must fall, I suppose. So this is the first in four Sundays that we have set aside for a series of studies, both sermons and Bible classes, that we called Road to Financial Freedom. And I would like to make something crystal clear from the very beginning. Financial freedom is not the goal. It's one of the many blessings of living with Jesus Christ as the Lord of your life. The goal is to be faithful as a steward of what God has given us. And He gave us these things as a test to see if we would love Him or if we would, as He asked Peter at the very end of John, do you love me more than these? You know, sometimes there is something that is in the Bible that we just kind of let slip by without really giving it its due attention. You remember when Jesus was on the Sermon on the Mount with Moses and Elijah? Peter was there and he got so excited. He said, Lord, let's build some tabernacles here. One for you and one for Moses, one for Elijah. That would represent the law and the prophets and the new covenant. And whenever he said that, God interrupted the conversation and he said something really interesting. He said, this one is my son. Listen to him. That's the key. And if you don't learn anything else, not only about your finances, but about everything else in life, then that's the key. Listen to him. He'll tell you what to do with your finances. He will tell you what to do with every single part of your life. And if we will listen to him, then we'll get through this life successfully and we'll accomplish what the Lord wants us to. We just had read to us Luke chapter 20. And it's a story of that Jesus told about a man who planted a vineyard. And he rented it out. He entrusted it out to some others and he went on a long journey. And then whenever the fall came and it was time for harvest, he sent somebody back to get his portion of it. And you heard the story and you're familiar with it. He did this three times. And each time he sent somebody back, they treated this person shamefully and threw him out of the vineyard. And they left empty-handed and came back and reported to the owner what had happened. And finally he said, well, then I'll send my loved son and they'll respect him. But when they saw him coming, you remember what they did. They got together and said, this one is not just a servant. This one is the heir. And if we kill him, then it will be ours. And they did. Now, the battle lines are clearly drawn. Who owns the vineyard? Now, these people who have been entrusted with this from the owner, they now lay claim to it. And they say, it's mine. It's ours. And I suspect that if this were translated into real life and this was something that happened here in this area and we knew these people, then we would hear them talking about how smart they were and how wise they were and how they now had control of this business enterprise and they could do what they wanted to with it. And I suspected that they boasted about it as time passed, and they began to spend the proceeds of that vineyard as if it were theirs. There's another passage in the Old Testament, and in our classes this morning, a number of passages were used to indicate this very same thing. Deuteronomy chapter 8, be careful that you do not forget the Lord your God, failing to observe his commands, his laws, and his decrees that I am giving you this day. Otherwise, when you eat and are satisfied, when you build fine houses, and settle down. When your herds and your flocks grow large and your silver and your gold increase and all that you have is multiplied, then your heart will become proud and you'll forget that the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery, he led you through the vast and dreadful desert, that thirsty and waterless land. With its venomous snakes and scorpions, he brought you water out of hard rock. He gave you manna to eat in the desert, something your fathers had never known, to humble you, to test you, so that in the end it might go well with you. You may say to yourself, my power and my strength of my hands has produced this wealth for me. But remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you the ability to produce wealth. There are lots of other passages in the Old Testament. The earth is the Lord's and all that it contains, the world and those who dwell in it. Psalm 24:1, a passage that was in our Bible class this morning, Psalm 50, verse 10, for every beast of the forest is mine, the cattle on a thousand hills. And the next verse says, I know every bird of the mountains, and everything that moves in the field is mine. Does that strike you as a pretty awesome thing that God said, I know every single bird in the mountains? I think about that. I like to quail hunt. And I think about that when I bird hunt, and I think about it, I have thought about it whenever I shot one of those birds, and it occurred to me, God knew that bird. Now, I still like to eat quail, but God knew that bird. He created that bird. And that bird didn't hit the ground without his knowledge. He knows every single bird in the mountains where there are birds that will never see a human being. You see, the biggest mistake in life is to forget who owns the vineyard. Bill Russell, I'm dating myself. I do that a lot these days. Bill Russell, for those of you who are younger, probably that name doesn't ring much of a bell unless you're a real basketball fan. He was inducted in the International Basketball Hall of Fame this past year. Still alive. Born in 1934. Played with the Celtics for 13 years. And 11 of those 13 years, they won the NBA championship. He was born in Monroe, Louisiana. And he wrote an autobiography entitled Second Wind. And in it, he tells a funny story about how he got in trouble over banana pudding. And by the way, it's kind of interesting to me because as I was preparing this, putting some final touches on this lesson Friday afternoon, then I was in my chair, Janice was in the kitchen, and I said, Janice, do you know what you're going to take to the Dinner on the Ground Sunday? And she said, you know, I've been thinking about it, and I think I'll take banana pudding. Well, maybe this will relate. You can relate to this. He tells how his mother fixed the banana pudding and left it to cool while she and his father went visiting. And when she left with these parting words, don't you eat none of that pudding. It's for supper. Alone, he said, I walked back and forth by the table, looking and wondering how it tasted. I knew how it tasted in general, but I wanted to know how this particular batch turned out. Finally, I said to myself, well, she made the pudding for me anyway, because she knows how much I love it. So just one little serving, it'll be gone in a flash. I'll taste it all the way down to the bottom of my stomach. With that last bite finished, he said, I ran outside to play because I knew that was the only way I can control myself. But after a little while, I came back in the house, and the pudding was still there. So I ate another bite. This serving, I decided, was my parents' fault because they had left me alone too long. It's their fault. Pretty soon, I had eaten about half the pudding. And then came the critical moment. I thought long and hard and decided, hey, I'm going to get a whipping anyway, so I might as well eat the rest of it. He said, what I had eaten began to feel as heavy as a cannonball in my stomach. I felt sluggish when I needed to be sharp and plan my strategy. He continues on in his autobiography by telling that when his parents got home, he'd worked himself up so much that he locked them out of the house and wouldn't let them in. And I'll let you read and find out what happened, the result of that. But my point in that is this. We start thinking that the pudding is ours, don't we? It was made for us anyway. And so let's take some more. Because it's ours anyway. There's a phrase at the beginning of this story that this lesson is built around about Jesus, that Jesus told about the vineyard. There's a little phrase at the beginning of it that just might slip by us that provides a valuable insight into our thinking process. It says, speaking of the owner of the vineyard, he went away for a long time. Time, we say, heals all wounds. But time also does some other things to us. It gives us time to think and rethink and rethink and rethink. And when we have time to do that, we have a tendency to rethink things in our favor. And we begin to take the present into consideration, maybe more than it's due, and we're not able to look at the long range very well. And given enough time, man tends to work God out of the equation. Now, you can put that in any context you want to, and it's true. It's true of creation, by the way, but that's not our lesson. We begin our relationship with God by being motivated by fear. We begin our relationship quite often in the homes with parents and learning some discipline. And there's some fear associated with that. But time passes, and we forget who owns the vineyard. We think of the Lord kind of like the tax collector, that he's coming to take some of what is mine. And how much of mine am I going to give him? And when we begin to think that way, then we begin to act that way in our lives. And our attitude changes about everything, including the Lord. And the Lord can, in fact, become our enemy, and at least he becomes our competitor. And we talk about mine, what's mine, and what's the Lord's. And the Bible doesn't know anything about that kind of thinking. Do you remember who it was that he sent to persuade us that the vineyard is his? He sent his son. And do you remember what his son did to persuade us that the vineyard is his, but that he wants to share the vineyard with us? He hung on a cross. God is giving us the opportunity to show him if we can be trusted. That's what this wealth stuff is about. Or will we turn our trust to things rather than to God? You see, the whole point of our Bible class and the lesson today, the road to financial freedom begins with recognition and acknowledgement that the vineyard and every single thing in it belongs to God, and we're tenants. And the verse that we didn't read there in Luke chapter 20, the next verse says, and the master came back. And it's going to happen. One day he's coming back. And then everything is going to be laid out in the clear daylight. What did we put our trust in? God has been incredibly good to us as a nation and as individuals, hasn't he? And he wants us. He gave these things to us for us to use for our pleasure. It's not, we don't have to have guilt associated with that. but also to understand that it's all His, and to use it with that in mind. One day He Himself will return to take possession of it. And the road to financial freedom begins with the recognition and acknowledgement that the vineyard and all its proceeds is His. And one day when He comes back, He's going to judge us according to our stewardship, according to how we've used the things that He's given to us. Money, time, talents, opportunities. And the Lord's given us a really, really neat opportunity one more time here this morning. That if you're not a Christian, He has spared your life and brought you to this moment and brought you to this building for the very simple purpose of giving you one more chance to come to Him and to put your trust and your faith and to demonstrate that to Him and to yourself and to all men, that that's who we trust while we stand and sing.